Oh yeah, we're back. We're absolutely back, and we absolutely have something to talk about. Because when you're going to make an absolute DC Comics character, you absolutely do something completely brand new. We're talking about Absolute Martian Manhunter. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to your new favorite show, The More You Nerd. And we are back after taking a little tiny vacation. Oh, it feels like it's been so long since we've put out an episode, but it's only been like 2 weeks. But we are now back here to wrap up Absolute August. Yes, I know it's the end of September, and technically you're getting this on October 1st because I didn't clock when this is coming out, so sorry. My name is Drew, and I need the hard-nosed detective to my weird spiritual possessing space monster. Miles, how are you, my friend?
I'm pretty good. I'm happy to be back recording with you. I'm not necessarily happy to be back, you know, from vacation.
sure.
But I am very excited to talk about this book, because I feel like this, we talked about this off air, but for what we had this kind of feeling about this book, it's why we did it the last, because we had heard a considerable amount of hype for this book. It was a 6-issue miniseries that got turned into a 12-issue series. So that told us, okay, there's something here already. Because that decision happened pretty quick into the book's run. Because I think this thing sold very well.
Yeah.
And if I'm not mistaken, I think it sold like 120,000 copies, which it like today is amazing.
The first issue had 120,000 pre-orders.
Pre-orders, I'm sorry.
So that's not counting the what actually sold. That's just the pre-orders,
which is great. I mean that is, and especially in this day and age, that is insanely good. But after the last two Ultimate books, which have been a little bit of a mixed bag, I was a little nervous going in. You know, we started off real strong. It's been kind of diminishing returns ever since.
Well, especially because we knew we were only going to get to read the first half of the story. Mm-hmm. We knew we were going to get to read the first 6 issues of a 12-issue run. And, gang, this might be a short episode because this might be one of those episodes where we just can't stop complimenting the thing.
And I was a little worried because we had one listener talk about how they read the first issue and it wasn't quite clicking for them yet. But a lot of these things have been very extremely serialized, almost novelesque. And this one is not necessarily different in that respect, but it's certainly written in a much more strict issue format than the last two books were, where everything, like the last two books, especially Green Lantern, everything felt like, oh, this is part of a single read, whereas this, the issues do feel separate. And Martian Manhunter is a character that is kind of a dark horse in another way. He's a character a lot of people actually very much love, but it's not the first thing you ever think of, you know?
Yeah, it's also like back in the day, I guess these are Silver Age characters or the Golden Age characters, I don't know.
Silver Age is
back in the day, DC started having Silver Age stand-ins for their main characters. You know, it's where you get Green Arrow as a Silver Age stand-in for Batman, Martian Manhunter is a Silver Age stand-in for Superman. You know, his classic power set is that he can do everything that Superman can do, except he can also turn invisible and phase through walls, and he has psychic powers, and he is afraid of fire, or he's got this something. Fire is the weakness. But when we talk about the Absolute Universe and how it's, you know, the core of these characters with one particular thing missing, like Batman's without the money and Wonder Woman's without Themyscira, and the Flash is without any sense of time or place, and who knows what the heck is going on in that book. This feels much more like a complete reimagining of not just the Martian Manhunter character, but like this book is wild.
This book is wild, but it's not just wild for wild's sake. There is an intent here and a purpose that I think under less deft hands than this creative team could have been a complete mess like the last two books we read. And again, I enjoyed elements of the last two books we read, but we were much cooler on those than we were three books.
But those two were also much more typical superhero comic books. This one is a Technicolor dreamscape nightmare. it feels as much influenced by things like Twin Peaks as it is by things like Superman.
Not just that, but, and I was kind of right, this absolutely feels much more like an exercise in pop art, in exercising the comic book medium in the way as dictated by Scott McCloud. And especially if you've ever read Scott McCloud's Zot stuff, which if you haven't, I highly recommend it. Scott McCloud is awesome, but there is this era of indie comics that I feel like this takes inspiration from. And John Jones, aka the Martian Manhunter, has always kind of skirted obviously he's been part of the Justice League and stuff, you know, and been a major player, especially since in the last 30 years. But he's also been the one that, you know, will get like a Vertigo book or get like these off takes that investigate the idea of what about not John Jones, what about John Jones? And like in New Frontier, they had the element of, oh, John Jones actually works for the government, and as opposed to just being a detective. And what they've always played around with this. And I like seeing all of those elements come into fruition here in this wild, fresh take that honestly feels much more Japanese inspired than I anticipated. Because in this iteration, John Jones himself is not John Jones. He is John Jones, an FBI agent. And he is, I don't want to use the word infected because that sounds a lot more sinister. But he comes into contact with alien life.
John Jones is involved prior to the start of the book in what is, and this book is also very dark.
It's very dark.
It is much darker than all of the other books. And I think, I don't know whether it's under a separate label as a result, but it is part of the absolute stuff, of course. But John Jones, the FBI agent, is critically injured when a suicide bomber blows up a coffee shop that he happens to be in. All of this happens prior to, and when he comes out of his whatever's going on, he's starting to have what feel like hallucinations. Things, typically mundane things, are suddenly covered in all of these like technicolor dreamscapes and all of this stuff. And it is incredibly interesting to me that in 2025, they have a character that actively smokes this many cigarettes. You're muted, Miles.
Sorry. That's a noir staple, and I'm glad they kept that. I know for a while they were very, very strict. I think they've kind of loosened up on that because, you know, we're all adults here.
Yeah.
But also the fact that they every time he's smoking, it's always green.
It's always green, but the smoke itself factors into the way that things are happening. And as
because smoke is a big thematic thing.
Smoke is a huge thing. And it's interesting, of course, because, you know, the Martian Manhunter's big weakness is fire. That's not at all part of it. It's the smoke itself that is it is indicative of what is going on. And
in fact, he's immune to fire in this one.
Yeah, which is
to a degree
like, rad.
I love a little twist, but I'll tell you why I said this feels Japanese is it very much feels like a Shin Ultraman style, where he's got this alien being that he's sharing his mind with.
But this is what I love about it, because he doesn't know what's going on for the first like two issues fully, and he's got issues communicating with his wife, he's got issues communicating with his son, and his son has his own things going on that we sort of see as John is figuring these things out. He's not supposed to be working. He tell his boss at the FBI tells him to take a couple of weeks off, but he goes right back to work because he's got to figure out what's going on with this suicide bomber that almost killed him and killed a whole bunch of other people, because as a result, there seems to be no motive for any for that crime, and ultimately any of the crimes that take place after.
Yes, because the city of Middleton, which is like the middle of nowhere, that he, and that's a big thematic point, where he up and moved his family from DC to this middle of nowhere town, which I think they call it the City of Second Chances or something like that.
They call it the City of Second Chances because it is a city that's full of immigrants.
Right.
It's got, you have all sorts of different languages, and the way they describe the immigrant experience in doing this, and it's probably,
oh, it's harrowing.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's Denny's Camp or Dennis Camp. He's a Turkish Filipino comics writer. So you've got some of that. He was born in the Philippines, but raised in the Midwest. So the writer of this story,
he's a pretty recent, creator. I'm looking at a lot of his credits, and it's only been the last like 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And mostly the last three in terms of the big companies.
I mean, speaking from these six issues, I would be surprised if this did not put him on the map for.
Oh, I mean, he's single-handedly writing half of the Ultimate Universe right now. Like, he's writing Ultimate Endgame for Marvel this year. He's doing Ultimate Spider-Man incursion, Ultimate Hawkeye,
Ultimate Universe, apparently the writer of The Ultimates,
yes,
Avengers version of the new Ultimate Universe.
Which it's wild that he's doing both companies like imprint universes, you know?
Yeah, like, good work, dude. Get it.
Yeah, it makes me wonder. I mean, I liked the Ultimate stuff that we read for the podcast, and I've been meaning to go back into it, but knowing that he's doing an Ultimate book, I'm like, okay, yeah, I am 100% going to read that. But I love that this other element, that it starts with this crime, but then you see these other random horrific crimes. And I mean, and this is what you were talking about earlier, is like, I mean, you see someone set a homeless man on fire, who was just sleeping. And then you find out that it was 24 people doing it to 24 other homeless folks. And then they give you the number. It's like, oh yeah, it was 16 men, 5 women, and 3 children. You're like, oh my God. Like, this book is dark.
It's dark, but it's also like the second crime that we get is a guy that we learn, because John is figuring out that, yes, there is this being that he's calling the Martian, despite the fact that that doesn't
the
really,
Martian mind hunter,
the Martian mind.
Well, yes, they don't fully say the name, but I'm assuming that's what they mean.
It was censored, so I'm just assuming.
But it's started with an H.
No, this is in the sort of Mad Comics fold out at the end of when he figures it out. I'm copying it for you.
I thought there was a scene where he calls him the okay, yeah, but I think he says something else.
He does. He does call himself the Mind Hunter, but that's one of the things where the reason that it's so confusing and weird, and John can't figure out what's going on, is because for the Martian, Who is not just a single, well, he's a single being, but he seems to be much more like one of the, like the shadow, not the shadow, what's the specter or some of the other, like,
yeah,
nearly omnipotent, DC Comics beings that embody, like,
but I also like he shows up in this kind of pop art cubist form, and I thought that I wasn't gonna like that, but I love it.
Oh, I love
it so much.
But it's because the Martian doesn't understand vocal communication and words. So like, because it is a being that exists mostly on feeling, it is spending the first couple of issues understanding how to communicate with John in the same way that John is understanding how to communicate with it. And it's at that point when they finally figure it out that, and part of it is him is the Martian going into John's memories and pulling out things like a camping trip that he took with his dad, where his dad said something like, "All right, let's get ready, partner," or something like that. Mm-hmm. And that is a phrase that the Martian repeats to John before they go on a mission periodically throughout the book. Like, it's
partnership's a big theme because his wife brings up that word a lot too.
Yeah. But the second criminal is this guy that because, you know, he can read minds now. And all of the things as they walk around, because this book is kind of muted colors for all of the real stuff, and this just technicolor mindscape for
kaleidoscopic.
Words coming out of people's heads and thoughts, and
I need to get some a print or two from this book, because this book is gorgeous.
It's so freaking cool. I love it. But the guy has not dementia. What's the
they say it's a form of schizophrenia,
but he's talking about how these people are aliens,
are aliens,
and they're Martians, and they don't even know it. And you know, and as John sort of sees this, and he sees all these people dying around him, he happens to calm the guy down because the Martian reads the guy's mind, and he pretends to be this childhood friend of him. And when I say that this book is really, really raw and really dark, but really, really like effective, is that John gets this guy to calm down, and the Martian sort of unravels whatever is going on in his brain and makes him realize what he's done. And this guy has this sort of, "Oh God, what did I do? I think I need heh," and it's just an H-E. And then one of the cops on the scene shoots him in the head, and you get this image of this guy's head and the bullet exiting the back of his head as this technicolor that we've seen from everything else, like the 60s, 70s technicolor just coming out of the back of his head from the exit wound. And it's just like simultaneously gorgeous and powerful, but horrible at the same time. And there's so much of that stuff around, especially as we learn what's going on in the book.
This scene is so rough, because you really want, despite the fact that this, you know, they do a good job of making this person seem like an outright monster. And then when the Martian starts to unravel his thoughts, and it's like, no, there's some deep-seated problems here that are not even his fault. And that sort of, not endears him, but you're sympathetic, you're empathetic to this character, and you're like, I want to see this character get help. And then the thing that would probably happen in real life happens. You have some triggered happy cop just bop him in the head. And then the next scene, you think, okay, well, you know, this guy's going to get his ass handed to him. No, John's the one who's getting reamed by his boss, because why were you just talking to him? And I'm like, what?
But it's in these scenes that we start to get the hints of the bigger plot. And from here on out, spoiler warning, we've already spoiled a couple of things, but big spoilers coming in about 5 seconds. Four, three, two, one. Yeah, the big bad of this book is the White Martian, the old school
love it
Martian Manhunter beings that, but it's basically an evil version of this same kind of Martian green being that is sort of infecting this entire town and turning the whole thing on it. And as this is when we get the first reference to, and this, I wonder whether this was in the book originally or if this is the stuff that's been expanded in the 6-issue to 12-issue run. We learn that the White Martian is sowing anti-life for the sake of Darkseid. And there is this amazing pop art version of Darkseid that you see just a single page of, and it's so freaking cool looking. Oh my God.
And it also ties the room together. Now you see, oh, this is that one blip of universal lore that you're getting that's going to end up tying so much stuff together.
Yes.
Even though this feels so completely separate from anything that we've read. We don't get anything about Lazarus or what's going on with other superheroes. And that's exactly what I wanted from this book. And kind of what I hoped for every book.
Yeah.
To be perfectly honest, like, I get that you have to have some references here and there to everyone else, but Green Lantern and Flash felt too in the weeds. It was kind of like when Marvel were putting out movies that, like, they were so in the universe that, like, you couldn't, like Ant-Man and the Wasp Quadromania or whatever it's called, where it's like, yeah, that's not bad, but like parts that are really good.
But I hope you saw Loki season one and watch this and watch this and watch
right,
this.
You're right. There's like so much of this, like, okay, well, so it's so refreshing that, okay, this story stands on its own, but you have this one bit where even if this wasn't connected to the absolute universe or to anything else that's going on, it's still this awesome moment, like, oh, how's that going to tie in with this story? And it likely isn't. It's likely setting the stage of what the absolute universe is, but it's a phenomenal moment. It's a huge payoff, especially if you've been like reading other absolute books or at least read the All In special. Sorry. And just to know what's going on, because there is this constant conversation that the Martian kind of brings up about how like something's wrong with this universe. And the White Martian is absolutely being this agent of anti-life for Darkseid. And
we even get a couple of Darkseid is, which
that made me so happy, because that brings up one of the best Grant Morrison Darkseid stories.
I really thought when it happened that I wasn't gonna like it as much as I did, but I just I love you, Darkseid. I'll never be mad at you.
Yeah, I mean, this creative team, I mean, from the colorists, the letterers, the
Javier Rodriguez, a Spanish artist doing the art for this. He's all over the map on stuff that he's worked on. He's worked on Spider-Gwen, he's worked on Superior Spider-Man, Daredevil, Amazing Spider-Man, Defenders, Star Wars, Deadpool, all sorts of stuff. He's done covers for a number of these things as well, including a bunch of different Marvel and DC books. But the character designs themselves between the Martian and John Jones, just the two of those are so... they're iconic. I love the look of this book so much.
Yeah, I'm assuming and hoping that they'll put this all together in like a nice 12-issue hardcover, and I will absolutely buy it, because this book is stellar.
It's
like, I don't even want to spoil the last couple issues, but like, it's this, I mean, Twin Peaks is a great reference point, but there's a little bit of everything. There's a little of Twin Peaks, a little Japanese sci-fi weirdness. There's some Twilight Zone. There's pop art. There's classic indie comics. There's even classic DC comics. Like, this book is just brilliant. This is exactly what I wanted from the Absolute Universe and what I wanted everyone else to bring to the table. And while I give Absolute Batman and Wonder Woman their flowers, those are both phenomenal books that did exactly what they were supposed to do, given those characters.
Yeah.
Absolute Martian Manhunter is what I wanted the other books to kind of be like.
It feels special. You feel like you're reading something special when you're reading this book. I'm mad that I have to wait 6 months for it to be
to finish the story.
Like,
yeah. And which makes me wonder if Martian Manhunter is going to be involved. I guess not. I will see in that Absolute Evil story, because like there doesn't seem a whole lot of room for like crossing over anything right now, because it's a very self-contained adventure. But I'm assuming, because of the way this book ends, because initially it was a 6-issue miniseries, and this ends, but it also has a very open like
there is a 100% cliffhanger at the end of issue 6 that is
but unlike like Absolute Superman, Green Lantern, and Flash, this is an actual open-ended cliffhanger. This is something where you could end a miniseries on of like, oh yeah, there could be more, there is something absolutely going on here. But if you had to end it at 6, this is like, ooh, I hope they follow that up, and not, oh, I just finished this book in the middle of a scene. Like, that's not the case here.
Yeah.
And so I'm very happy to report that. I mean, this book is just stellar. And I feel bad that I don't have a lot more insightful things to say, because it's just going to be me gushing about this book.
I could go page by page on stuff that I like about this book. That's just not going to be interesting.
Right. Yeah.
I warned at the beginning of this that this might be a quick episode, because we just only have good things to say about it. But when I say that the use of color is huge, it is especially huge in some scenes that are primarily in black and white, and more of a grayscale than a true black and white. And then the color that comes out as a result of that, based on something that a character says and an explosion of color that happens with a realization. It's just, this book is special. Mm-hmm. I love it. And
I just thought of this. I thought it was kind of interesting. John Jones is kind of in this Absolute Universe is kind of created as the anti-Constantine. He is a smoking blonde, coat wearing, always have a bandage on investigator, but he's not snarky. He's not given pithy dialogue. In fact, you don't get him interacting with a ton of people in a meaningful way. It's the exact opposite because of the effect of the Martian Manhunter. And I love that. I mean, there's so many things about this book that are so purposeful. And it's one of those things, it's like watching, you know, Kubrick or Paul Thomas Anderson or something, where you know that every frame of what you're watching or every panel is done with purpose and intent. Every color, every shading, everything is on purpose. And I think this book is, frankly, one of the best comics I've read all year.
It is one that I read it digitally, as I read almost everything now, but mm-hmm. I wish that I had 2 issues of this book specifically because
the first and last
issue of this book end with pages where you are intended to hold them up to the light and see something coming through them. That's so cool.
Very, very well done. Now, the digital version does like show
it
you.
It shows you what it's supposed to look like, but it's not the same.
But it's not the same. And what an incredible experience in 2025 that people are still doing these kind of physical comic gimmicks that from our childhood, because this stuff used to happen all the time. And, you know, accompanying like 5 chromium covers across different stores and stuff. I love that they did this, but it also,
and I think I mentioned this earlier, it just feels very Mad Magazine in a way that's like the art style kind of feels like something that you might find in an early Mad Magazine.
It does. It also feels like very, very like late 80s, early 90s indie comics. Like I said, Scott McCloud specifically, but there is such an independent spirit. There is such a creative spirit here. I believe this already has won the Eisners. I think it won a couple
already.
I think.
When were the Eisners?
Like a couple months ago, because our buddy Kelly won. I don't know if that's the case. This book may have been too new.
This book only came out in March, so I don't know how it could have won.
That's never stopped anyone before.
Fair enough.
I'm gonna look real quick, just in case, for this year. Maybe it didn't, but I thought I saw it being mentioned. Nope, it wasn't. Well, I think Martian Manhunter was.
Well, gear up, because I bet this is going to be winning some things. Oh,
this is 100% going to get the Eisners next year. I think Absolute, or Kelly, I know Kelly Thompson and the Absolute Wonder Woman team won several awards, and well-deserved. Excellent book, excellent team. We love Kelly, friend of the show. But this book is special. This is the magic of storytelling. This is the magic of sequential storytelling, or sequential art and narrative storytelling in the best way. And so many of these things I want to just like print out and slap on my wall. This is a gorgeous book. It's extremely inventive. They understood the assignment and they knocked it out of the park. I love this book.
100%. Could not say it better. And that is where we are going to put a pin in Absolute August. And oh boy, gang, do we have something special for you guys coming up. It's spooky season, everybody. October is upon us, and we've gone through and done trunk or treats. We've done teen horror. We've done all sorts of stuff. And when it comes to the matter of teen horror, I want to talk about some horror stuff personally. That this is me saying this. I came up with this idea. Miles didn't come up with the horror stuff this year. I did, because I'm going back to my teenage years and Miles's teenage years, because we are going to spend the month of October doing an retrospective. That's right. We are taking a look at the original Resident Evil games. Resident Evil 1 from 1996 is going to kick us off, as we go all the way back to what wasn't the first survival horror game, but the game that I think put survival horror on the map.
Oh, 100%. I mean, the we'll get into it next week, but no, it's not the very first survival horror game, but it is the one that solidifies and really kickstarts the genre as we know it. There's really no way around that. And don't throw any of your deep cuts at me. I'm aware of them, but this is the game that makes the genre exist in a mainstream format.
Yeah.
Without the success of this game, yeah, you would have had something here and there, but not to the degree that we have now.
Yeah. And for a guy that never watched horror movies growing up, because I was always too scared of them, except for Alien and Aliens and Alien 3, boy, did I play the Resident Evil games. So we're going to kick off with Resident Evil next week. We are both going to be playing...
Not the remake, by the way.
Not the remake.
Original.
The
director's cut, whatever's
the director's
PSN.
Cut, or what the unrated edition.
It's director's cut.
Yeah. Which we're going to go into a lot of the release of this game as well, because boy, Japan really didn't think we were going to be ready for some of this stuff that we were absolutely ready for.
Yeah, right.
But we're playing it on the PlayStation because it's because the first game is on the PlayStation Plus Classics catalog. But you can actually purchase this game as well as Resident Evil 2 and 3, which might be coming up in a couple of weeks as well, on Good Old Games. They have a trilogy that you can purchase for your computer to play these games as they were originally released, or at least as close to it as you can get. So get ready to stand in one place and turn left and right before walking forward by pressing up on the D-pad. Resident Evil is next week. And now, Miles, we end the show, as we always do, with a rousing
nerd out. Too nerd for y'all.